We are in Cheles Halvoves, Shara Bitochen, Perek Gimel. And we're in the middle discussing the requirements for Bitochen. The Cheles Halvoves told us that there are five things that need to be in place in order for a person to have proper Bitochen. What are those five? So we're in the middle of the fourth. So to briefly recap, number one is to have the 7 points of awareness in place. We've repeated them so many times that I'm not going to do that now again. The 7 points of awareness. Number two is the understanding that Hashem is watching us to see, are we trusting Him? Hashem expects that, and He wants to see, do you rely on me or not? Number three is to put our trust exclusively on Hashem. Not to have anything else in the picture, be it somebody else, my own talents, etc. My source of aid, whether it's salvation, whether it's sustenance, is from Hashem. And Hashem has the means through which He's giving it to me, which He could do it any way He wants. Sometimes it'll be through my own talents, my employer, someone who's helping me, etc. But that's not where it begins. It's not like if this person weren't here, oh gosh, you know, I think about what would happen if I didn't have this skill. What would happen if I didn't have this employer with this setup? No, this is how Hashem decided to provide for you now. He could just as easily do it other ways. And we want to keep that focus. What I have is coming from Hashem, or the aid that I need, it's coming from Hashem. And number four, this is what we were in the middle of. Number four was, if you want to trust that what Hashem is doing for you is the best thing possible for you, so you have to make sure to be doing your end, doing what you should be doing for Him. As you said, if you have a person who is spiting Hashem on the one hand, but then on the other hand says, well, I trust that Hashem is doing the best for me, everything, whatever I would want. So he said, that's silly. So you have to be making sure to do yours, then you can trust that Hashem is caring for you in the best way possible. Now here, a few questions came up here. So first of all, what we stressed is, last week we actually contrasted it with something else the Cheles Halvoves said. I'm not going to get into all the details now, but what we stressed last week was that this means that you are doing your best. You're doing your best. Now, before we move on, I want to actually bring up some questions that were sent in about this. And I'm saying in advance that I'm going to answer them partially, but not fully. And part of the answer will be to explain why. The questions were as follows, a couple of questions. First of all, when we say that you have to be trying to do your part, does that mean, here's the way it was worded. In my mind, there's a big difference between, say, eating pork and not eating a top hechsher. The first is spiting Hashem. The second is perhaps not living up to an A-plus standard. So what are we talking about here? Are we saying that you have to be living up to an A, to a top standard in order to expect that Hashem is doing the best for you? Or do we mean that you're not spiting Him? It's a good question. And then the question goes a step further. Is Hashem's love and His care for us, is it based on our performance? Is Hashem measuring us by our performance, or is it inherent? Is it always a question of, am I really good enough? Is it a question of, am I doing as good as the other person who may be doing better than me? Does Hashem's attitude toward me depend on that? These are very, very poignant questions. And then the question goes a step further. Then what happens to people who are actually, quote unquote, spiting Hashem? But let's say it's because of a very, very difficult situation that they're in. Let's say take a Holocaust survivor, Rahman al-Islam. People have been through other extreme sufferings that really broke them down. So what if they're bichlal not holding in a place to be able to say, well, I understand that this is best for me. So how does Hashem relate to such people? Here also do we say, well, then Hashem is not necessarily caring for them because they're not doing their part. These are very, very tough questions, very poignant questions. And I don't want to answer them in public, and I'll explain why, and that will be a partial answer. Meaning these are really questions that, assuming that I'm able to answer them, which is part of the question, these are very, very tough questions, assuming that I'm able to answer them, still are best addressed on an individual level. And I want to explain why, because I think that that itself is worth the discussion. Not just to explain why I'm not going to answer, but I think that it's a chashuv point to explain why. These are questions of extremely high stakes. What do I mean by that? What I mean by that is that there are two sides to the coin here. And if you downplay either of them, you could really be getting in trouble. Meaning as follows. Every individual has to understand quite how much Hashem loves them and how much Hashem is focused on them and how, like Chazal say, Bishvili Nivra Olam, as far as Hashem is concerned, you occupy a place in his mind, Kiviyachol, that nobody else occupies. Nobody else can replace you for Hashem. Nobody else can be for Hashem what you are for Hashem. Hashem never had anybody else like you in history. Every individual, every neshama is something completely unique. And if we're talking in terms of the bigger plan, occupies a place in Hashem's plan that nobody else could replace. But talking in a little bit of a more narrow way, nobody else could be for Hashem what you are. And this is something that no one can take away from. Now, even if, Chalila, a person fails, and even if a person is not quite living up to what they should, I shouldn't say the two in one breath. I would say, you should say, even if a person really sinks, Hashem is still watching them with love and is always there, like we say, Miyamincha Kshuta Lekabel Shah. Hashem has his hand outstretched. Now, we have to understand that with the love, we also can't, and now, but I want to, but here's the point. We cannot downplay Chalila by stressing expectations, by stressing things that Hashem wants of us. We can't chas v'shalom downplay the, Rabbi Israel Tauber called this, the erech ha'etzem, the inherent value that each Jew has for Hashem. And if we were to downplay that, bring a person to a place where he feels like, I'm not living up to what I should, and I'm learning Musar, I'm learning about all kinds of high expectations, I'm just so far from there, therefore I'm just nothing, and I don't even make it onto the map, Bichlal. If this is something that we'll convey, we'll bring a person to feel this way, we'll have failed dismally. On the other hand, we also can't downplay the fact that Hashem has expectations. Hashem has expectations, and we can't whitewash that. We can't smear that. With each individual, Hashem has his own individual cheshbon. And that's why we say that it's very, very difficult to know. What exactly are Hashem's expectations of each individual? We don't know. But we'll put it this way. We're saying that anybody who is considering in terms of themselves, in terms of where they themselves are holding, Hashem, like we said before, Let's not focus on how does this work with so-and-so who seems to be going through things that you just don't know how the system begins. Let's not talk in those terms right now. Right now, let's talk in terms of how it sounds. Anybody who's listening to this means that they're in the ballpark of relating to how it should be working, right? So to understand that, yes, Hashem loves me immensely. And to really appreciate the fact that I am for Hashem what nobody else in history ever was. And to appreciate more than that, to appreciate that when Hashem took the B'nai Israel out of Mitzrayim, it wasn't that Hashem was making a cheshbon of, wow, this whole process is worth it. For a nation of millions, it's worth investing in this. But Chazal said, "Vishvilini v'ha'olam," and this is Maral makes this point specifically regarding Yetzias Mitzrayim, Hashem was actually gearing this and doing it for you on an individual level. When we say "Vishvilini v'ha'olam," what that means is that Hashem said, he looked at each neshama individually, not just the people who were there in Mitzrayim, but every Jew who would ever appear on the scene was all planned in the first place. And Hashem was specifically gearing the whole process of Yetzias Mitzrayim and Matan Torah because of the relationship he wanted to invest in with each of us on an individual level. It wasn't just done for a nation of a couple of million. It also wasn't done for a nation of a couple of million with all their posterity. It was done for the individual Jew. According to a number of Mefarshim, that's why Hashem says that Hasinai Anochi Hashem Elokecha. I am your, it's said b'loshen yachid, in the individual tense. Hashem doesn't say, I am your God in the plural. Anochi Hashem Elokecha. He says that with regard to other mitzvahs. When Hashem is introducing himself to the Jewish people at Hasinai, Hashem says the words, Anochi Hashem Elokecha. I am your Hashem, in the very singular term, because this is something that he's doing now, creating a personal pact, a personal relationship with every individual Jew, those who were there physically at the time, and those who are being planned later. Each of us is given our own message of Anochi Hashem Elokecha. I am your Hashem. Now, that message of Elokecha, what exactly is the significance of that? What does it mean that Hashem is somebody's Hashem? Hashem is somebody's God. What exactly does that mean? So there's two sides to the coin. It has the side to the coin that I am your God, as in I, as an Elikim, am completely focused on you. And I am identifying myself, Kiviyachol, as your Hashem. As your Hashem. And the other side of the coin is, I am your Hashem on your end of things, meaning in your mind, in terms of your dedication to me, I have to be your Hashem. That you are, I fill your consciousness. I fill your goals in life. I'm the Hashem that you are dedicating everything towards. So it would be very scary to really try to play that balance. How do we measure the way Hashem relates to me just because of who I am versus the way Hashem relates to me because of my performance? It would be very scary to try to touch that, because if we chas v'shalom downplay either side, we could be committing a real sacrilege. We can't afford to downplay the way Hashem relates to each individual just in their own right before even talking about what they do and what they don't do. But on the other hand, if we leave it at that, that would also be a terrible sacrilege to say that, and therefore your performance doesn't matter. Your performance matters very much. Hashem does expect a dedication. Hashem does expect a dedication. Now, so we can't afford to downplay either side. And that's why when we come and we ask, this is a very poignant question. So when Hashem is relating to me, is he relating to me just because of who I am and because of how much he loves me? Or is he relating to me based on my performance? We have to leave that as an educated, don't know how to work that out exactly. Both are fundamentally true. And chas v'shalom to downplay either one of them. Now, as for the next part of the question, was, so do I have to be, like, to what extent does it go? I have to be constantly measuring myself up against others? So the answer is no. You know what? Here also I should say yes and no. Yes, in a certain sense, but no in essence. Meaning, like we said before, Hashem has his personal relation with each individual. Each person has their own koiches. If there's a reason at looking at others, it's for the purpose of trying to expand our own frame of reference. Sometimes you might not do things just because you don't have the concept. And that's why it's very important to be shaykh to a tzibur of people who are working hard, who are serving Hashem at as high a standard as they can, because that automatically has an effect on you. If you're, the Chavos Halevavos says this elsewhere. Now, I'm stressing that I'm prefacing it with the peripheral part. And soon I'll get to the Ikar. I'm starting with the Tafel. Soon I'll get to the Ikar. But Chavos Halevavos says elsewhere, he says that people naturally tend to have their sights on people who are, it's okay. People naturally tend to have their sights on, slowly, it's okay. People naturally tend to have their sights on people who are have higher material standards, right? They're living at a higher material level of them. That's why I look at it always with the sense of, I don't really have everything I could, right? And when it comes to spiritual performance, we tend to look at people who are operating lower than us and saying, well, I'm doing pretty good. The Chavos Halevavos says that really the goal is to reverse it. You want to be looking at people with a lower material standard and say, that's what you should really be focusing on and say, wow, I have it. I'm living a life of luxury. And when it comes to spiritual standards, to be looking at people with higher standards and saying, oh, there's more to do. So yes, you want to put yourself into a society where growth is appreciated, growth is encouraged, people are working to grow, people are working to have higher standards, because then you might actually discover that you're capable of things that you didn't necessarily realize. Whereas if you're living in a society where, say, everybody is relaxed, the main focus is on the material, everybody's basically punching their cards, making sure that they're doing things in a basic way, then it's much easier to feel like, well, I'm doing, we naturally, whether we like it or not, we do look at ourselves. See, before addressing whether we should look at ourselves relative to others, we start by relating to the fact that we do look at ourselves relative to others. Afterwards, we'll get to whether we should. Since we do look at ourselves relative to others, so we start by saying, you want to surround yourself with people. You want to be connected with people who are operating at a higher standard. But then that creates a risk. We'll get to that. I want to keep reassuring you. If you're going to leave here, then you may leave discouraged. But so that's why I keep saying we're going to get to that. But we're starting by saying, since it's a reality that we do create our frame of reference, we create our sense of reality. What's normal? We create our sense of normal based on the people we're around. And therefore, we judge ourselves. We say, am I operating substandard, superstandard, etc.? It's going to be based on the people we're around. Part of our own growth process is to try to put ourselves into a reality surrounded by people whom we can look at and say, oh, I have more to do. Right? Think about that. What does normal mean? Normal means the way I was raised, and basically the society I grew up in. That's normal. So, and therefore, whether I'm doing above normal, under normal, will always be measured based on that. We've all probably had those experiences. I know that when I, moving from one yeshiva to another, very, very much changed my sense of normal when I was exposed to much higher levels of accomplishments, not because the first yeshiva was lacking, it was just because it was limited to a very specific age bracket. So, in that sense, we start by saying, since we do relate to ourselves based on others around us, we should make sure to put ourselves in a place where we're exposed to higher things. Now, having said that, now we come back to the Ikar. The Ikar is that each person has his own very individual cheshbon. Each person is, no two people have the same full picture in terms of your emotional constitution combined with your physical constitution, in terms of your natural inclinations, and in terms of the background of your story, the family you were raised in, the experience you were put through, the experiences you were put through as a child, and after you were a child, the society you were raised in. No two people have the same story because Hashem has a different personal program with each individual. And Hashem sets up your life accordingly. And in that sense, we're not being measured against others. It's a question of, are we doing the best we can be doing in the circumstances that we were put into with the specific set of koiches that we were given? And here, you might have a person, two people come to Shamayim, which one, the objective level, is much more accomplished than the other one. He knows much more, much finer character, etc., etc. But the other person might end up getting more credit because he was put into a more challenging situation, given a lower intelligence level, etc., but enough to understand where he should be working toward. And he may have worked a lot more and made a lot more of the circumstances he was given. So now, are we talking about, when we're talking about, when the Chodesh Avodas tells us that if you want to be sure that Hashem is dealing with you in the best way possible, you have to make sure to be doing your end. So once a person is a Shomer Torah mitzvahs, he is in a very beloved place in Hashem's eyes. When a person is not Shomer Torah mitzvahs, it's more complex. We can't get around that. We can't just come and say, well, everybody's the same and it all just depends on, you know, how you make use of the opportunities. A person who's a Shomer Torah mitzvahs is in a different place than a person who is not. People who are not, we return to the fact that Hashem has his very specific cheshbon with each person. Hashem knows where each person is. We all understand that. And yes, Hashem is dealing with each person according to their very specific circumstances. But once a person is a Shomer Torah mitzvahs, he knows that he's in a very, very special place with Hashem. He's in a very, very special place with Hashem. Now, does it then depend on what level you're operating on? So like we said before, we have to come back to the fact that Hashem has an intense love for each individual person just because of who they are. And at the same time, Hashem does expect you to be working. He does expect you to be trying to get closer to him. We can't whitewash that. Now, we say, so what happens if I see people around me who are having higher standards, I just feel like it's too hard for me. So here, and this is also where it gets a little dangerous, because sometimes we would tell a person that this itself, that this person is doing A, you're doing B, maybe it's because of the fact that you have other things that you have to be struggling with and growing in because of your very specific like circumstances that don't give you the space to be working at growing higher in these other areas. It's a little abstract, but I hope that the point that I'm making is clear. You have a person... What's that? Okay, let's try to repeat that in less abstract terms. A person looks at somebody else and says, this woman, look at the koichah she's putting into davening. Look at the koichah. Every tefillah by her is a proper tefillah, etc. And I should be pushing myself more to daven like her. Okay? Now, let's expand the picture a little bit. Right? This woman is a woman who has, at this point, she doesn't have a house full of children, and she has a lot of time, and she knows how to utilize that time, and she's putting her koichas into tefillah, right? She's putting her koichas into tefillah, while you may still have a lot more going on in your day, and you're putting a lot of work into just keeping up with the daily demands that are on you. Now we have to realize that those daily demands are also growth. Not also growth. They are growth. Right? Hashem, like we've discussed a number of times, Hashem puts a lot into our lives. Hashem puts a lot into our lives because of the growth he wants to get out of us. So it's not like sometimes we make the mistake of thinking, let's have a lot going on in my life, right? I have a spouse, I have children, I have various responsibilities. Now, I first start thinking of growth outside of that. Right? Okay, I'm busy with all kinds of different things. And now the question is, how much effort am I putting into davening? But Hashem put all those things into your life because he's saying there's a lot of growth you could be generating on a regular basis by keeping up with those demands, with those responsibilities as optimally as you can. That is growth. That's a lot of work, right? So therefore, we can't come and say, no, for you right now, that's not the stage of life you're in. Those are not the circumstances that Hashem put you into to be trying to emulate this woman's davening. What can we say? What will we say? That a person should not be living with a lackadaisical attitude. Don't just be living with an attitude of, well, look, I'm basically doing what I need to be doing. That makes me just as good as anybody else. On the one hand, it does. Every person has its own inherent value that no matter what, you have that value. But on the other hand, Hashem does want us making efforts. Hashem wants us making efforts. Hashem does not want us pushing ourselves over the deep end. But Hashem does want us making efforts. And what he'll be giving us in life and the way he'll be relating to us will be in response to the efforts we're making. When we talk about the things that Hashem brings upon a person, so when a person is looking to be moving ahead, to be growing closer to Hashem, Hashem puts things into his life that give him opportunities to reach further. Now let's say a person is not, and something comes up. So you have to realize, and this is another point that the Chacham Soloveitchik makes elsewhere, that really anything that, and this is a big qualification of what we just said here, anything that Hashem puts into a person's life, right? So you ask, why is Hashem putting this into my life? So you said, well, if you're performing at a high level, then it's for your good. If not, then it isn't necessary. What happens if right now I'm not performing properly and Hashem puts something into my life? I say, okay, this isn't necessarily for my good because I haven't been acting so nicely lately. I haven't been acting as I should lately. So there's a big clause here, a very, very fundamental clause here. Chacham Soloveitchik makes this point elsewhere. Did we see it already? We did see it already, I think. That is that when Hashem puts something into your life, it does not have one specific locked-in purpose. When Hashem puts anything into your life, it has a few different ways that it can be cashed. Some challenge comes a person's way. Okay? I'll use an example that, a simplistic example. Okay? A person is walking through the street, you bang your shin bone, that hurts. You bang your knee, your kneecap, your shin bone, really hurts. What is the meaning of that bang? What is the meaning of that bang? So, the meaning of that bang can be a few different things. It can be nothing. It can just mean that you got hurt. That's all. It begins and ends with that. When will it be that? What if I don't want it to be that? If you don't want it to be that, then you have the ability to make it not be that. But let's say it happened because, you know what? You have a yitzhahara you have to work on. You have this taiva to bang people on their shin bones. Okay? And this is something you have to be working on. You have to be changing that at your own pace, of course, right? If you can get it from 10 people a day to 9 people a day, that's great. You still might have a problem with those 9, but you have to be working on it. So this person got a bang on the shin bone. On the one hand, it might be a punishment from Hashem for banging people on the shin bones, right? But on the other hand, this person can say, Hashem, you're giving me a message here. I'm going to take that message and I'm going to focus on the pain and I'm going to think about the fact that that's actually what the people who I hit also feel like, right? And therefore, it's going to inspire me to get it down in one shot from 10 people a day to 6 people a day, right? So you have to realize that now you just turned... I shouldn't give that example because you have to stop hitting people on the shin bone. You shouldn't be doing 6 people a day either. But if we're talking about the concept, right? If you suddenly, that made you turn around, not only did you gain in the fact that it turned you around, which was what Hashem wanted, right? Hashem sent this to you. He said, I could either just be giving this person tit for tat, or this will be my yamin chapshuta lekabul shofar, my extending my hands to draw you closer. If you actually do that, then not only are you gaining in the fact that it's getting you onto a better track, but Hashem will be giving you a lot of credit and also telling you, I'm proud of the fact, right? This brought us closer. Now me and you have brought our relationship to a different level because of the fact that you were able to relate to it this way, right? Now, what happens if you don't bang anybody on the shin bone? And therefore, that's definitely not the lesson. But a person just says, Hashem, I don't know exactly why you did this, but you did this to me. And therefore, I'm going to accept it. That also brought you to a closer place with Hashem. And that also turned this bang into something very beneficial. So even when we're talking about you know, a person who is wondering, maybe this happened to me because I'm not in the right place. Maybe this happened to me. Maybe it's not really for my benefit. But it happened to me because I'm not operating on the right level. So you know what? Once you're thinking in those terms, you've already moved yourself onto a higher level. And you have the ability of turning it into something that was done for your benefit. Question.
Is there ever a punishment without, from Hashem, without something?
Without a benefit?
Yeah.
No. Meaning there could be. There could be. But once you always have the ability to turn it into not. That's a major, major point that the Chovas HaMavos makes elsewhere, which is really, it's really a Gemara, right? And that is that, no, there is never a situation where something came upon me and it's just there for the punishment. Because at the very least, if it came as a punishment and I accept it right, I achieved kapara for that punishment. Hashem does not give punishments for the purpose of getting back at you. Hashem is not interested in evening scores. Hashem is not interested in tit for tat. Hashem is interested in getting you back to where you should be, or getting you higher than you already are. If a person ignores it, that's a different story. Now, what happens if the person, here we come back to one of the questions that was raised before, what happens if a person is not even in a place of thinking in these terms? So here I'm coming back and saying, anybody who's listening to this shiur is already not in that category. Because now you're already thinking in these terms, whether you like it or not. But let's say it happens to a person who isn't thinking in these terms. A person who's simply not holding there. So here we come back and we say that sometimes the tafkid that Hashem has for a person is outside of the usual rules. It's outside of the usual rules. If we're talking about Chalila, Holocaust survivor. So here we just have to lower our heads and say, this is something outside of the usual set of rules. We don't know what Hashem is doing with this person. And we have to be able to acknowledge that also, that Mishpotecha Tohim Rabba. Hashem is doing things with people. When we're a part of the system, we understand the system, then we know how to relate. We know how to relate. We know what we can make out of any experience. When Hashem is doing things with a person who's simply not in the ballpark, then we have to have that bitachon, as far as we're concerned, that if the person really, it's not part of his frame of reference, we understand Hashem loves this person intensely. And there is something else going on between Hashem and this person that are outside of the rules that apply to me. How exactly does that work? I don't know. We can theorize. We can theorize. Now, the reason this gets dangerous is because you don't want to ever make the assumption that, hey, that's me. I'm outside of the rules. And this is something that is going on beyond. Once a person is wondering, does it apply to me? Then the answer has to be, no, 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 no. You are in that system. And your response should be, okay, what step could I be taking to be getting closer to Hashem? To be getting myself a little bit better, etc. It could be at a slow pace. You could do it at your slow pace. But you can't absolve yourself from it. And that's like why it gets scary to start talking about the situation where someone is outside of the whole frame of reference, and that's where once we accustom ourselves to the concept of oinus, it can become something tantalizing. And that's dangerous. So therefore, whenever a person is wondering about where do I fit in, if you're wondering, then you fit into the place where Hashem loves you intensely because of who you are. You mean something to him that nobody else does, and he wants you to move toward him. He wants you to take steps toward him. When you're wondering about someone else, yeah, just one moment, we'll take the questions. When you're wondering about someone else, there we simply say, to the extent that this person really doesn't have in their frame of reference, where it's really beyond them, then we just have to trust that Hashem has a loving program, a loving process in effect with this person that is beyond me. If I would see the bigger picture of this person's neshama, I might understand it. If I would see what Hashem is manipulating for further down the line, sometimes even in Olam Hazeh, you could suddenly see how things in this person's life turned around, etc. And now you say, oh, now I understand what Hashem was doing here. But yes, Hashem has something individual going with this person. We had a few questions waiting to be asked.
Okay. If you go back to in this framework, right? Something happens to a person. And then you can look and say, well, what is, you know, is this a sign? You know, should I, you know, is this a message I should be trying, you know, X, Y, Z, or just accepting, you know, just accepting this is Ratzon Hashem and I'm going to accept it, which could, that could bring a person closer to Hashem, but is that always enough? Or always, the goal is to always be looking for that, what else, like, what should I think? Like, sometimes we view that Kabbalah by itself as the,
as the achievement,
or is it not real? I mean, why should we be right looking for more?
So a very chashuv question in Hilchis Kabbalas Yisurim, if we'll put it that way. And here we have to say, sometimes this is a subject that can be turned into something that is like just above us. Something happened to you, you have to pinpoint exactly why, exactly what Hashem wants here, exactly. And if I miss, then I completely miss the boat. So we have to understand that. Hashem does, whatever Hashem's processes are with us, are within the realm of things that we can relate to. And therefore, we allow ourselves to say that there are simple, if you will, halachas in terms of these things. They should don't have to be over our heads. 101. Number one is, we accept. Accept simply means that I acknowledge this is coming from Hashem, and if he wants this for me, then I'm going to try to be okay with it. Doesn't mean it's going to be easy, but once you already have this awareness, you have already turned it into something beneficial that's bringing you closer to Hashem. Now, Chazal also tells us, Yifash fesh b'masav. A person should take things as a wake-up call without expecting to hit exactly on, No. Hashem was not referring to the Shmiras HaLoshen. He was referring to the fact that you should be in the Kabbalah Shabbos 10 minutes earlier. Not 10 minutes earlier. Earlier. I don't even know exactly how much. How should I figure it out? What should be 7 minutes earlier? So, no. Hashem wants you to take, there are rules to growth, which should be in place even when things aren't happening. Right, there are rules to what are next steps that I should be taking? Where should I be putting in more effort? And this is taken as a call to apply that. Apply that. So I take an honest reckoning and I say, Hashem might be giving me a little bit of a push to say, there are things you could be doing better. What's such an example? What's some change that I can make? I wouldn't even say a change. Where should I step up efforts in an area that I'm working on anyways, that I should be doing anyways, the way I'm talking to X, to this person in my family, right? I know that it's been a bit schwach lately. To take a general accounting of, usually using the usual priorities, what's something I should be putting a little bit more effort into now? So if we can do that without going crazy, without trying to figure out mysteries, that's never what Hashem expects of us. To be able to do both of these things, to say, okay, let me take this as a call to be doing something a bit better, right? And also simply to say, this Hashem did for me, this is best for me. How do I know it's best for me? Because the very fact that I'm acknowledging it is best for me already turned it into that success. Like we said before, there isn't a very locked-in designation for what it is. Hashem leaves it open to you to fill in. It's like an open check that you are going to fill in the value of it. So by saying, Hashem wants me to accept this to the best of my ability, even by just acknowledging, I don't know if I can accept it or not, but I acknowledge that this is something that Hashem is doing. That's already called acceptance. Acceptance doesn't have to mean that you, like in the stories of the person who stood up and danced, right? You didn't stand up and dance, but you're acknowledging it. You're already turning it into a success. And appreciating the fact that it could be cleansing me of different things, etc. I don't know exactly what. And even if it's not, well, I should say even more than that, it might be even a higher level. If it's not even cleansing me for a particular other, it's just therefore, Hashem says, I think you're capable of handling this now, and I want to give you that opportunity. So did we answer the question? Okay. There was another question. Same question. Okay. Another question came in here. Just give me a moment. The neighborhood is filled with children at risk of rejected Yiddishkeit. What should our attitude be toward one of our children has rejected Yiddishkeit? What should our attitude be to the fact that it's happening to them, their family? Another poignant question. Start by saying, okay.
Hashem is giving this to the world.
Let's say, okay. Let's talk in broad strokes. It's 1:15, so feel free. Let's talk in broad strokes right now. We want to draw, even the broad strokes can be fine lines. There's a balancing act. There's a balancing act. We want to be able, and I hope that what I'm about to say is clear. We want, on the one hand, to be able to, I would like to say both these things at the same time. Right? Not to say one and then the other. So kind of like put it on hold, and then when I say the next part, put it together. Not to acknowledge behaviors as okay. Not to acknowledge behaviors as okay. If something is objectively wrong, to be able to realize that this, what is happening here, is objectively wrong. But to put a big stress on the word objectively and to understand that, Lamaisa, certainly when we're talking about, when we're walking through the streets and seeing children, these children in all likelihood have been through very difficult things on whatever level it is. I don't know exactly what level it is. And to appreciate that there's a lot of pain out there. We are a generation. I heard a Adam Chacham put it this way. He said that again, feel free to leave. We're done officially. But that in earlier times the Golus manifested much more in like a concrete outer kind of way. Pogroms, like dire poverty. Whereas today, it's more what we call Golus HaNefesh. There's a lot of suffering going on the inner levels that we don't know how that worked in the past. We don't know how that worked in the past. And to be able to feel that, first of all, to suffer, to hurt in that sense is part of it. It's Klal Yisrael is suffering a lot of pain. And we're looking, and if you look at these kids and realize that these children are representing that. These children are representing that, many of these children. So, on the one hand, you can't be telling your children, you have young kids, it has to be clear that behaviors are wrong. Once you start saying, well, you don't know what any person is going through, et cetera, you're in a sense opening up a door for them to say, then I could do whatever I want also. But on the other hand, certainly to be realizing that these people are, in all likelihood, dealing with very, very tough things that we ourselves likely never tested with. And to feel pain, the main feeling to be feeling toward them is hishtatfus betzar, it's nesia ba'oil, right? Realizing that a child is not enjoying not being on a successful path. And it hurts. It hurts. Generally speaking, I think we can allow ourselves to say that the dropping of Yiddishkeit is not coming from a place of wickedness. It's not coming from a place of vicious. It's coming from challenges that are unique to our God. What does Hashem expect from each of these children? So that comes back to what we discussed before. Even among each of these children, just like among ourselves, each one is an olam umlo. Each one is a whole different world. Even though, just like with me and you, if it looks like we're going through the same challenge, lemaisa, it's two completely different worlds because of our different background and constitution. So when you're looking at these kids also, each one is a whole world. And if we can do something to help them get to the person, if we can be that person, or help them get to the person who will try to learn up that world as much as they can and try to help them in that world as much as they can. So there's no question that the number one attitude is, what help can we get for these children? So that is the essential attitude. While at the same time, realizing that we don't want that to lead to a place of, well, what they're doing is okay. What they're doing is okay. It's a fine line, but I think that it's a line that anybody who's been around enough should be able to toe. What is the attitude to the fact that it's happening in a family? Hey, these are very, like I said, poignant questions.